Hello, this is Laura West from One Star. Did someone just join the call?
Hi, Laura. It's Tracy.
Hi, Tracy.
I think
you're the only one on so far.
I'm an early bird.
You are. It's awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, great. Carly is on her way up, so she'll be in listening as well.
Okay. Great. Great. I am going to mute us here at One Star and wait for our presenters to join the call, and then I'll get back on.
I'll do the same. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Hello, this is Laura West from One Star. Did someone just join the call?
Yes, this is Lori and Emma with Keep Austin House.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good.
Hi, Lori and Emma.
Hi, Miranda.
Hi.
And whoever else is on the call.
Yeah, did someone else join the call just now?
Yes. Hi, this is Nicole Vera.
Great.
And this is Michael Griffith and Sarah Holliday from Breakthrough Austin.
Great. Good.
And okay. Aaron Allen from American Youth Works.
All right.
UIW.
So I'm glad to hear that we have some of our presenters on the call. Right now we are just kind of slowly taking roll as people join in, and then I'll give just a brief introduction and then hand it over to our presenters. Has anyone else joined the call that would like to say your name?
Heather and Joe with Swift.
All right. Hello.
Hi.
Anyone else? All right.
Sir Ray is here from Reading Partner.
Okay. Great. So hopefully you all received the PowerPoint, and we'll be using that as our presenters go through the peer-led call today. So just let me recap. This is Laura West at One Star Foundation. I have other One Star representatives here with me. And this month's call, grantee peer-led call for January, is all about evidence. So the title is, I've Got Evidence, Yes I Do, I've Got Evidence, How About You? And we have some wonderful staff from Reading Partners and Breakthrough Austin who are going to be talking to us today about all about evidence, what it means to them, how they use it, how they track it. And they put together a really great PowerPoint that you all can use as a reference. And hopefully, I believe there will be some time at the end for questions and answers. But right now, can we just wrap up roll call, and then I will turn it over to our presenters, and they can take it away. Has anyone else joined the call that would like to tell us your name so we can write you down? All right. Well, we'll go ahead and get started, and at the very end, we could take roll for anyone else who may join the call later. And I encourage all of you, unless you are a presenter, to mute your own line. Whatever that function is on your phone, just mute it, please, so we don't get much background noise, and our presenters can, you all can hear our presenters clearly. But One Star will now mute ourselves, and Reading Partners and Breakthrough, you guys can take it away.
Thanks, Laura. And can you confirm how many organizations are on the call right now, just so that we might change up our format if we have less than about?
We've got at least 4 or 5 plus the two of you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Laura. I want to take a... My name is Nicole Fair. I'm the Program Manager Partnership Specialist with Reading. And I want to welcome you all to the peer-led call. I really appreciate you being here on the so if you're
on break tower, I don't know if that's me.
Yeah, I hear the phone. This is Laura at One Star. We hear the phone cutting in and out as well. I'm not sure what to suggest.
My apologies. Let me try and call in from another line.
Go ahead and try to call in from another line, Nicole, and I'll go ahead and take it from here until you can call back in.
Thanks, Chris Ray.
No problem. So as Nicole was saying, we just want to thank everybody who has joined the call. It takes some investment to want to join an evaluation training call, so we do appreciate the time. We'd like everybody to go ahead and save the questions and comments and thoughts that you might have throughout this training for the end. We're going to have a Q&A as well as a group discussion, so I think all of those questions will really come in handy at that point. If you go to slide two, we really have two main learning objectives for this training here. We want you, by the end of this module, to be able to describe, collect evidence for your program, and also how you can use that evidence to write a strong AmeriCorps grant application. If you go to slide three, we'll do a quick overview of our agenda here. We'll start with some introductions. I am Krista Ray Flynn, Director of AmeriCorps Programs at Reading Partners. Nicole Vera, who is just speaking, is our AmeriCorps Program Manager at Reading Partners. And what we do is we're a national nonprofit. We partner with elementary schools across the country. In Texas specifically, we partner pretty heavily with the Dallas Independent School District. What we do is focus on who are half a grade to 2.5 grade levels behind in their reading. These schools give us a classroom that we convert into a reading center. And in that center, we recruit local community volunteers to come in. We train them on our curriculum, and then they go ahead and tutor students twice a week, one-on-one, for 45 minutes. The AmeriCorps members are what we call site coordinators, and they're at the school site essentially supporting our tutors in those one-on-one tutoring sessions. So now I'll go ahead and turn it over to our colleagues at Breakthrough for some introductions.
Thanks, Krista Ray. My name is Sarah Holliday, and I am the Assistant Director of Development at Breakthrough Austin. The mission of Breakthrough is to create first-generation college graduates. We serve students beginning in sixth grade and stay with them until college graduation. We serve approximately 750 students across Central Texas in grades 6 through college, and we focus on two key areas in our work. Out-of-school learning time, which is academic-focused in middle school with an academic middle school summer program, and then it becomes college access focus once students enter high school. And the second aspect we focus on is intensive case management, so every student is known well. Our AmeriCorps members work as summer teaching interns during the summer in our academic middle school summer program and case managers throughout the year on Saturday programming and after-school tutoring.
So, and my name is Michael Griffith. I'm the Senior Director of Programs at Breakthrough. And I'm delighted that everyone's here on this call, and we hope that it's helpful. You will see on your agenda there on slide three that we're going to spend a little bit of time, the next two bullets, Reading Partners and Breakthrough, just sharing our thought process on how we gathered evidence and how we went about writing the grant application so that we could put forward our best case. We're also going to share some CNCS resources that we're lucky to have as part of this presentation. And as Krista Ray referenced, we will close by having a conversation with the group. So that's what we're going to go into, and go ahead and turn to slide four. And Breakthrough's going to start out the sharing section by talking a little bit about how we gather evidence. We have a performance management system, as I'm sure everyone on this call does, and we look at to closely measure and track each student's progress and to measure our overall program performance. And this evidence obviously is incredibly important, and the main things that we do are bulleted there. We have access to student records, and we partner closely with the school districts here in Central Texas to have live access to students' grades and attendance. We also do collect data through data pools from the districts whenever we need it. We conduct our own assessments, especially around academic progress, but also on other factors that impact college access and completion. And we do a lot of qualitative work around surveys, surveying our families and students to make sure that they are receiving the services they deserve. We take all that information and we organize it in a customized Salesforce database that evolved over the years and is crucial to our work to be able to both understand where individual students are on the path through college and also create aggregate reports that demonstrate performance. Again, performance measures is just that last bullet there. I wanted to just highlight we do use this to determine what is quality in our program and are we meeting our stated mission. And go ahead and go to slide 5. We also gather a lot of evidence externally, as I'm sure everyone here does. And so here's how we thought to break it down. We look to benchmark ourselves well. It's very complicated and messy work in college access, working with students over a 12-year or longer time horizon. And so we search actively for other organizations that are doing similar work with similar students, and so we could see how we're comparing to them on our performance measures. We also do significant ongoing research around what other organizations do to address the same problem. We look at university studies, institute studies, to see the interventions that we are using, do they work or they not? We also have had the fortune of conducting impact studies. One significant impact study done by an external evaluator, the Technology and Education Consulting Associates, which is located in Central Texas, conducted a study with students who have gone through the program and went back in time to compare them to like students who did not go through the program, and they controlled for a lot of demographic, academic, and behavioral characteristics, and you can see there in that quote that our students were 3.5 times more likely to graduate from high school and almost 2 times more likely to enroll in college. So that impact study was extensive and affirming for our work, and it shows that what we're doing works. We're trying something new with the current impact study where we are starting with students who are just entering in 6th grade and working in partnership with districts and an external evaluator to compare them to students who did not enroll in our program and compare them year over year, see what happens as they go forward. So we're excited about that impact study. I'm going to come back and talk further about how we described all that evidence in our grant application. But first, I'm going to turn it over to leading partners to talk about how they do that stuff too. So go ahead and go to slide 6.
Thanks, Michael. What I want to do is talk about how we align our data to performance. And when I say performance, I'm talking about what we all know as performance measures at CNCS. So at Reading Partners, we had a bunch of data, and we are wondering how do we combine all of this data into what we call our performance measure outcome statement. Essentially, what is the impact that we're having? And what we decided is that our performance measure outcome statement would say that 65% of our high-need target students who completed the program, which we define as receiving at least 16 hours of tutoring, that they would increase their literacy skills by 1 grade level or more. And this statement is crucial because we use it in so many different pieces for press, for grant writing, and so I would encourage all of your programs, if you don't have them already, to have 1 or 2 sentences on exactly really what all your data is able to roll up into. So how do we do that? We could go to slide 7. I wanted to share what some of our resources and what some of our tools are that we use to track our results. Similar to Breakthrough, we also have a customized online database, Salesforce is what we use. And on there, we go ahead and manage all of the tutors that we have, our teachers, and all of the student data. Of course, we have standardized processes to ensure consistent and accurate data collection, entry, and also making sure that we have folks to analyze all of that data so that we can have some good reporting that comes out of that. We also survey our tutors and teachers 2 to 3 times a year. just so that we don't assume that the program is going great. And any time that we get below a 90% satisfaction rate in any one of our categories, we go ahead and have meetings around it to decide what we need to improve and update in our program so that on our next survey we can get those percentages at an increase. We also assess our students three times a year. First one is a baseline assessment to decide how far behind the student is and therefore where they will land in our curriculum. A mid-year assessment will happen to decide, are they on track to meeting our goal that we want them to hit at the end of the year? And then at the end of the year, we'll go ahead and give them an end-of-year evaluation assessment to decide exactly how many gains they've made. The assessments are really important because they allow us to decide if this student will need an instructional reading plan. So if the student isn't making gains on track to where we need them to be, we'll go ahead and add an IRP to the curriculum. And what we found is that with this additional support and this supplemental tool, that they actually do increase their gains, and most of them end up getting caught up to where they need to be at the end of the year. So all of this is to say that on slide 8, we're able to create a nice visual that, once again, we can use in press releases, we can use in our annual reports, and this enables us to give folks various pictures and various ways to tell a story about our impact. If you go to slide 9, I wanted to share a little bit about what we're starting to put into our grant applications. A couple of years ago, when we were just a single state program and a much smaller program, we were able to see through our assessments what our impact was. However, we know from going through the evaluation process at CNCS that that's a pretty weak form of evaluation. So now we're trying to step up our game a little bit more and start to look into external evaluations. We're fortunate enough to be able to do this through Social Innovation Fund grants with the support of Ed McConnell Clark Foundation as well as Mile High United Way. They're actually funding a randomized controlled trial that will involve over 1,000 students in a couple of different states, and that is going to help us be a moderate, if not a strong, evaluation and move us from the evidence-informed category into the evidence-based category. Slide 10, I won't go ahead and read those paragraphs, but I wanted to pull out what the template is that we use to create this language in our grant applications. What we do is start off with stating the research that proves that what we're trying to solve is actually a problem in this country, and that one-to-one tutoring is shown to be a great way to help at least start to solve that problem. Then we go into talking about what our future evaluation studies are going to look at and the various tools that they're going to use to look at it. And then lastly, we want to show how we're going to use the results of that study to improve our programs going forward. All right, so we're on slide 11 now, and I'll throw it back over to Michael.
Thank you very much. So I think that's a really great reflection of how Reading Partners went through that process. What I'm going to do is close out how Breakthrough thought to use its evidence to write a compelling statement in the grant application. So I don't know about anybody else on this call, but we found that it was challenging to look at these directions for the grant application and the notice of funding opportunity and do a really good job of understanding what it is that CNCS would like to see from us. And so we spent a lot of time thinking through this and trying to figure it out. And so as I reflected on what to share, I just wanted to share really about two sections in the grant. One, the first being the problem statement and how there is definitely evidence that needs to be shown both internally and externally there. And in the section called the Highly Effective Means to Solve Community Problems section, also titled Evidence-Based, Evidence-Informed, and Measurable Community Impact. And we thought through a lot of evidence for both of those sections. In the problem statement, We wanted to not only show that the evidence that there is a problem, that it is truly a problem, that first-generation college goers are not graduating at the same rate of those that whose parents have graduated from college, and we wanted to show that was truly a problem, and it was also specific to our geographic region because that was throughout the directions really clearly. We also wanted to not only show that it's a problem, but we also wanted to describe and show the research around why it's happening. What are the causal factors to that problem? And so you'll see on this slide here some description of how we thought through that. We identified three causal factors. One, that first-generation low-income students were falling behind academically in school, particularly during the summer. This summer learning loss was truly causing a gap to develop. Another causal factor is that first-generation college goers had less mentorship about how to go about this thing called college and how to persevere and to who do you turn to when you have questions. And the last point was there's a disparity in college preparatory skills, these non-cognitive factors. And this is definitely a causal factor for many first-generation goers. So we did a lot of research around that and looked to write a compelling problem statement that way. In the grant, just let's turn to slide 12, we also try to think through the section that our intervention was a highly effective means to solve this problem. And we had to decide, just as Krista Ray and Reading Partners had to decide, whether we were evidence-based or evidence-informed. And we got a lot of definitions going there. And we thought through, well, we like every program does, have good performance measures and gathers a lot of information. And we do have an impact study. So where does that put us? And we actually fell on the evidence-informed side because we didn't think we had, as the directions note, more than one well-designed impact study. We thought we had one, even though we're going to have one in the future. So maybe later we can put ourselves in the evidence-based section. So that's how we thought through that. And given that really we were able to design our narrative in this section better. And we looked a lot into the research that supported our interventions, and so you'll see that's the next part of that slide there. Again, what we thought would be good was to tie our interventions and the research around it to the causal factors in the problem statement, and so we found other organizations that had been doing similar interventions with similar students, and for example, in out-of-school time learning, and we cited research that was making a significant difference for similar students. Same thing with the case management model, that this having an advocate, someone who takes care and knows students well and doesn't let them fall through the cracks, that makes a difference. And we went and found proof that is actually happening. And lastly, around that other intervention that we really focus on, around non-cognitive skills. And at the end of this evidence section, we then focused a lot on our impact study. And how it was designed and how it met the definition of being a quasi-experimental intervention that made our work fall into the evidence-informed category. So that's a basic overview of how Breakthrough thought through evidence gathering and this grant application. I wish it was that short of a process for us when we actually were doing the grant application. It actually took us a lot of time. But we think it, in a way, it really made us able to communicate the evidence that we have for our great program. So go ahead and turn to slide 13. And a note that we're going to be talking about in the next several slides, some resources that CNCS put together for us. So we're lucky to have these visuals and definitions for us to talk through. So on slide 13, you'll see a graphic that talks about theory of change. And I think the point of this slide is to really talk about how we're all gathering evidence, but what CNCS really cares about is that the evidence shows that the specific intervention you're doing, it has the intended outcome that you want, and that other evidence isn't as pertinent. And if you turn to slide 14, I think this is another way of saying that same thing, that the activities that we all do as AmeriCorps programs are supported by research to demonstrate a high likelihood that these activities will address the need and result in intended change. Again, it's about that intended change. So turn to slide 15. Here's a definition of evidence. It's a pretty good definition. You can all read it there. Information that supports your choice of a specific intervention and its ability to produce your intended outcome. And if you'll turn to slide 16, I think it's worth noting that CNCS does look at this differently for new and existing programs. And so you'll see there some good definition, but for some good language around this. But for new programs, I think they want to emphasize that if you don't have an existing program and it's about program design, then you want to describe the design of your program really well and look for comparable programs in your research. And for existing programs, it's important that your evidence shows that what you're doing already is working, and therefore you deserve to continue it. So that is a quick look at a few slides here, and I'm going to turn it back to Reading Partners to continue to share some other CNCS resources on slide 17.
Thank you so much, Michael. This is Nicole. I'm now back on the line without a connection problem, hopefully. So I'm going to start talking about some possible sources of evidence. So if you're on slide 17, you should look for evidence that program models or interventions like yours have been successful. So CNCS has identified four possible sources of evidence that can help you make the case that your intervention is likely to achieve the desired result. The various national service programs may have different requirements concerning the use of evidence, so be sure to check the appropriate notices of funding opportunities for those details. So the four sources of evidence that CNCS identifies are as follows. Your past performance measurement outcome data, results from an impact evaluation of your program, research that documents the outcomes of similar programs, and impact evaluations that document outcomes of similar programs. So any of these sources that collected data using rigorous methodologies can be used. However, it makes for an even stronger case if you have more than one type of evidence to present that shows similar findings. So we're going to look at some of these sources in more detail. If you turn to slide 18, please. So one source of evidence is your own past performance measurement data on outcomes. Past outcome findings from performance measurement do not show causality, but they do provide data about whether or not a change occurred. So while outcome data from performance measurement can't show that the change occurred because of your specific intervention, it is useful because it shows the intended result was achieved. If you're looking at your past performance data as evidence for an intervention, consider what do your data tell you? For example, did you achieve your intended outcome? And do you have multiple years of outcome data you can aggregate? Using data from multiple years makes a stronger case for the effectiveness of your intervention. So if you have it, use it. Moving to slide 19. So another source of evidence that can be results of an impact evaluation done on your project or program include impact evaluation uses rigorous methodologies in order to prove that the intervention caused the outcome. So the key questions to ask yourself are, does it document change? Does the evaluation clearly show that your intervention is what caused the change? And a process evaluation, on the other hand, looks at how your program was implemented and maybe at benefits it provides sites or beneficiaries, but it does not assess outcomes or causality. So as evidence to support your intervention, a process evaluation does not help. It needs to be an impact evaluation. I hope that's clear. Now on to slide 20. So the first two sources of evidence we just discussed come from your program. The next two sources are research studies and impact evaluations from other programs. Research studies tend to focus on increasing knowledge or understanding of a particular group, problem, or issue. Impact evaluations look at how well specific programs work and what outcomes were produced by an intervention. So it's important to remember that these two sources provide evidence about the interventions used by other organizations. Therefore, you need to assess whether certain criteria are met. Now I'll throw it back over to Breakthrough.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. As you can see on slide 21, CNCS provides some criteria for us to consider when assessing the quality of our evidence. CNCS reminds us that it's important to be sure that the intervention that was studied in the article or report that you cite is relevant. They guide us to ask, was the intervention similar in design, dosage, the type of beneficiary served, and outcome achieved? And CNCS also reminds us to ask, is the evidence compelling? Is it persuasive? And does it indicate the intervention produced a significant result? They also remind us to ask, is it up to date? That is, was the evidence that you're citing published in something recently, and has it utilized current thinking around the issue? And they tell us to ask, is the evidence objective? Is it from a source that has no stake in ensuring a positive outcome? Was it published in a peer-reviewed journal or as a research study from a credible organization? Peer-reviewed journal articles are great sources of information because they have been screened and selected based on their merit by other professionals in that field. Now, Michael will share a helpful visual and speak a bit more about this topic.
So, on slide 22, and on slide 23, CNCS has a visual that shows how they, when they look at our evidence that we provide, about how strong the evidence is or how weak it is to make the case that our interventions do what we say they do. So I think it is a helpful visual. I hadn't seen it before preparing for this call, so I think it is good to look at. The thing, when I look at this visual, you'll see low on the left and high on the right, and the strongest category on the right demonstrates that it is for programs that have evidence that shows causality, that the intervention we do causes the outcome. And it also is resultant of studies that are the best possible research studies you could do with randomly assigned control groups in an experimental design. So that's the ultimate high and strong quality evidence. And on the left side, on the lower end of the spectrum, is the evidence that doesn't necessarily show causality. Maybe it shows correlation. Our outcome results and from our performance measures and all the data that we gather about internally about our program. So one thing that I think there are a couple definitions in here that are worth talking about. We talked briefly about causality and how important that is, but how do you get way into the high category, which I don't actually think Breakthrough is in. I think we're somewhere in the middle there. Because we have research, an impact study, that is in that moderate category that shows quasi-experimental design. We have an impact study that wasn't randomly assigned. They were comparing Breakthrough students with others, not randomly, but really tried hard to figure out in control for every variable we could to see if we were making a difference. It was a good study. It was in this quasi-experimental category. For those that I think Reading Partners has, the strongest evidence is a study that is very experimental in design. The participants don't know they're receiving the dosage. It's the intervention, and it's blind to all possible variables so that you can really determine at the highest scientific standards whether or not the intervention worked. So I think that's helpful to look at. The next slide shows an example. If you turn to slide 23, they have this, I think it's not a real program, it's called Shape Up, it's a good name though, and the left side in that preliminary column, they would define it as preliminary evidence if the program were able and only able to show through their internal evidence that 75% of girls aged 14 to 16 who participated made more healthy food choices. And it would only be preliminary because, in CNCS's view, it wouldn't show necessarily causation, although it's a good outcome. You can see that it steps up in evidence strength in the moderate category because they were able to do an impact evaluation using a quasi-experimental design to compare girls going through the program and girls not going through the program, and they were able to make more healthy food choices. And the strongest example they have there would be an experimental design with random assignments, and after a period of time, we're able to determine at high scientific standards, rigorous scientific standards, that indeed, yes, this program caused what was happening. So it's one thing to look at. And that's actually the last resource we wanted to show, except Sarah's going to talk about a couple online resources on page 24.
Great. Thank you, Michael. This concludes the formal slides that we had from CNCS, but for more information on CNCS priorities and performance measures and the topic of evaluation, the following URLs you'll see on slide 24 may be useful. Now I'll turn it back to reading partners to lead us in a conversation and share out around evidence and answer any questions you have.
So now I'd like to...
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sarah and Michael. So we've just talked a lot about our programs and our evidence and how, and now we'd like to open it up for your questions, your initial thoughts, and maybe some reactions that you might have. So if you would unmute your phone if you'd like to participate, we'd really appreciate it. There might be someone trying to unmute. Okay, well, I'm going to jump in and prompt you with another question then. We'd like to know how do your programs document why you do what you do and how it works?
I know we have some great representatives from AYW, SWIFT, UNT HIPPI. Would anyone like to share? We'd love to hear from you all.
This is Tamara. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Yes.
Okay. I just have a couple questions about the research. I'm kind of interested to know the size of the client base and your staff size, like how many people are involved in the like the impact study, and then what was the cost, you know, based on the number of clients or tutors or teachers that you had to survey, what kind of cost are we talking? What's the range of cost?
This is Michael at Breakthrough. I can speak to that a little bit. Great question. So there is, for us, we were fortunate to be able to have a very reduced cost for our impact study from a local evaluation firm. And this firm works with school districts, local school districts as well, to do evaluation. And they gave us a very reduced cost. I can't say what the hourly rate was exactly, but for someone's time who normally was significantly higher, it wasn't much. It must have been around she charged us around the $30 an hour range, which is really low. Mm-hmm. So we were fortunate there. Part of her incentive to do that is that she was looking to publish. in a white paper or in some fashion what the results of this study were, and so that kind of an alignment of resources here. And in fact, that's what's currently happening with our new impact study, is that it's going to be free to us, woohoo, because we have worked with professors at local university to get this done, and they are very interested in the topic. And so maybe that's something that we got. I think we got fortunate to be able to find this resource for us. But I bet if actively sought out, that could be a good way to go to get reduced price or free research done. Look for people who need to publish, and they would do the legwork.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say a cost to us on the impact study is definitely on staff time. I mean, there is, even though we're getting an outside evaluator, we have to gather significant data and administer surveys to both the breakthrough participants and the others who are not breakthrough participants. And so that's definitely a cost. And as I think through this, the challenge of gathering evidence such as this, I think that is, you've hit the nail on the head in what is the most challenging thing, that while it's great that CNCS is wanting this to happen, it's not feasible for everybody. I think we're just fortunate to have had this happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that helps. On the survey mm-hmm. side for our qualitative one, I don't feel like that's very costly. We designed a Likert survey with open-ended questions at the end to give to every student and family on an annual basis. And we already do family student conferences every year, so we already have the venue for that. And so it works out. The cost is paper and some staff time to enter the data and compile it. But it's not overly costly. And Reading Partners or anyone else on the call might have a different answer to those good questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was how we initially started our impact evaluations, was going to, since our headquarters are in Oakland, California, we went to Stanford University and found a grad student working with a professor so that they could do an initial external evaluation, but the cost was very, very low because we also wanted to write a paper on it.
Tamara, can you tell me this is Michael again, what organization you're with?
Sure. I'm with the Texas Family Literacy, and we are under the umbrella of a small organization called Literacy Coalition of Central Texas, and we have arms in Austin and Houston. We have about 35 members that deliver adult literacy, English as a second language, adult basic ed, GED, and then some early childhood literacy. And we do collect data, and we have evidence-based assessments for the students, and we'll be doing it in two cities. But I think Breakthrough, you said y'all are statewide. Is that correct?
No, we're here in Central Texas, too. We should meet you.
Right.
We only serve students within Austin ISD and Manor ISD.
Okay. But you get information from the school districts, so you get information from two different school districts.
That's correct.
Right, and so, yeah, we're looking at, we won't have to do the evaluation right away, but obviously we want to be able to collect data, improve our method, and collect data for continuing grants.
Great. That sounds really good.
Any other questions or reactions to the PowerPoint?
I had a question for the group. I wonder why if you're in the academic side, like Reading Partners obviously is, and sounds like Family Literacy is too, Texas Family Literacy, why a really quality assessment, norm referenced and good assessment that demonstrates growth isn't marked as high? It seems like it's all about the impact study, and this is just for my own edification, I don't know the answer to that. If anybody else knows a good answer.
Okay.
Hello, this is Carla and with Texas Hippie. I'm not sure about the question. Mark this high where?
Mm-hmm.
In the grant application, on that visual on the continuum. I mean, I guess I can answer my own question. Even if you do a great assessment that we are improving literacy rates or academic growth or whatever it is, you still don't know if it's your intervention that's actually doing it. It could be something else without a scientific design process. So, sorry, I just answered my question. Yes, does that sound right to anybody?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why, this is Heather with Swift and Schulenburg, and we are a rural school district, and that's the challenge that we're running into as far as evaluation to actually find out, is it our intervention or one of the many other interventions that the children we tutor, K through 6, are receiving that is responsible for their academic achievement? And then even finding a comparative group is turning out to be challenging because we are completely saturated. Every child that needs help in the school district gets help from us. And so anyway, we're having a little bit of a challenge with these evaluations that CNCS wants.
This is Carla again with UNT. We've done something this past year working with a student that might help, which is looking back at sibling pairs so that an older sibling who is now, or let me put it another way, the kid that we worked with is now, let's say, 3 years older, and looking at that child's sibling in that same grade. So when you do sibling pairs, it really does a good job of, you know, matching because they're from the same family, the same neighborhood. You know, the only difference is the classroom part. But even though that was a pretty small study, it was actually pretty helpful to go back and look at it that way because we could see that the older sibling, when they were in third grade, didn't do as well as the younger siblings who had been in our program now that they're in third grade. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not formally trained as Michael again in data or evaluation. I'm kind of a nerd, so I study it and I'm interested in it. It seems like what might be needed for you, Heather, and Swift would also be just trying to get the best data person you can locally, maybe from university. You could do some regression analysis and just try to tease out the variables as best they can. I say that as if I know how to do that, though. I don't.
Yeah, I know. We were actually part of the evaluation bundling program, and they were trying to figure that out with us, and we didn't actually come out with a good outcome. But anyway,
I thought I'd voice the idea because it may sound like I know what I'm talking about, but I really don't. So
yeah,
that sounds like a tough problem.
Yeah, the sibling pairs thing is interesting because we do work with a lot of families, you know, the several siblings in the same family.
Interesting. So I think we made an assumption in planning this day thinking that everybody had, I'm kind of curious whether or not this is true, whether people were new, recompete or continuation, where people were in the application cycle. Because a lot of the language we used in the presentation today was because both Reading Partners and Breakthrough just went through the recompete cycle. And the language changed significantly around this section. Does that make sense? And did anybody else, are you guys all there as well, or are you at a different spot? I'll take silence to mean that you have answered the question well in your own head. Are there any other questions or comments that people want to bring to the group? Okay. So unless anybody else has something, please chime in if you do. We want to just to close by pointing to slide 26 and thanking everyone sincerely for being on this call and wish everyone the best of luck in gathering evidence and writing about it in your grant applications. We wanted to include our contact information, so you'll see Michael, myself, Sarah's, Krista Ray's, and Nicole's contacts. And if you would like to send us an email or and have a follow-up to any questions, please do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Yes.
And Sarah at Breakthrough Austin and Krista Ray and Nicole at Reading Partners, we really appreciate, this is Laura at One Star, we really appreciate you guys stepping up to host this call for us. And we will be having our next monthly call February 20th that One Star is going to lead, all about updates from the field. And as always, these calls, I don't think I mentioned it at the beginning of the call, but we always do record these calls so that others who may not have been able to join at right at 1 o'clock can listen to them later. So that call recording should be sent out in the next AmeriCorps update. The link will be there, and we post those on our website. So if anyone wants to hear the call again or wasn't able to make it, they can always go in and check out the recording later. So thanks again to all of you at Reading Partners and Breakthrough. We really, really appreciate your time and effort and expertise on this topic. So thank you so much.
We appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, everybody, for joining.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right.